ratatouille and applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, la, and la. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Ah, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shame.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? Hope all's well wherever you are. The season is underway. Week two approaches. We've got to get to our picks. Great guest coming up today. I am hoping he can help my co-host over there. That man, Mr. Adam Rank. How are you, sir?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Yes, that great guest is Drew McGarry.
Oh, wow.
Great. One of my favorites. Love reading his work on Deadspin, Kissing Susie Colbert, and now a novelist. I can't wait to talk about. I don't know many novelists. I know several people who've written books, but
right.
A novel. Can you imagine out that many pages?
That's the thing that's amazing. It's not one of these like, hey, look, here, I cobbled all these things for my blog and
yeah, right.
Here's a collection of drunken hookup failure. He actually went out and wrote a three-arc story, which is impressive.
Yeah, and he used to be heavy set, so maybe he can point you in the right direction.
He used to do comedy, too. I should ask him about his comedy. It wasn't as bad as he thought it was.
I'm worried about you, Adam. Maybe Drew can help you out. All right, so it is episode 25. I encourage you, nay demand, you pay a visit over to NFL.com. Ranks pick sixes, always gangbusters.
Thank you.
Tom Brady won. A lot of people very interested in your thoughts about how he is transforming. He's going the other way from basically from Chaz Bono. He's going the other way is what you say, is your contention.
We actually had a final conclusion, and I don't think people read it because they were getting on me as if they weren't reading it.
Well, big story about Tom and that prolific offense because of Chad 85's comments about it. We'll talk about that in a minute. But like I was saying, NFL.com, along with the pick sixes, a brand new segment that I've been promising for some time. I'm very proud of my association with. In spite of my involvement, it's gangbusters. It's the NFL. My pals up at BindleDog.com in Chicago have animated my Hooey and Applesauce, specifically the NFL segment, the butterfly effect of the NFL. Change one moment in NFL history and watch how the dominoes fall in a different direction. And it's really, I think it's quite good, and I encourage you to check that out. Shame Report's up there, all on the Damashek blog, and again, at NFL.com.
It's good stuff. I think
why can't you be enthusiastic for once about something? How about you, Wilk Tye? Did you see it? Producer Wilk Tye.
I mean, it was all right.
Oh. Worse.
I'm kidding. I loved the NFL.
What about the Shame Report?
It was good. I didn't produce that one, so I'm a little hurt that I wasn't selected to produce this version of the Shame Report. That's all.
NFL, strong number two behind the Shame Report.
Ah, thank you, Rank. The bread and butter. That's what's still good. I'm not talking about food specifically. I'm just saying that's the Shame Report remains.
I thought that was my reward.
A nice piece of provolone. You've earned it, fella.
The new look Shame Report, though, is awesome. Yeah. If anybody hasn't seen the new Shame Report, the new set, that's very nicely done.
It's like film noir. All right, enough about all that. Let's talk football here. And like, by the way, Rank, kudos to you and me. We jumped into the DeLorean, took it up to 88 miles an hour before the week one games, jumped into the future to divine what was going to happen. 4-0. 4-0 is how we did with our picks in that one. So
absolutely,
we're going to do that in just a second. Now, number 25, like we do at the start of every episode, we name what player in football, nay, sports history, wore it best. You know, 25. And by the way, congratulations on getting to 25 episodes.
Congratulations.
No one outside this locker room thought we could do it.
It was us against the world.
That's exactly how it was.
You know what we did? And we took it one episode at a time, tried not to get, you know,
not look too far ahead.
There were some highs, there were some lows. And, you know, we just said, listen, God willing, if we just keep churning, we will get to that mark.
That's what Tony Romo's doing as we speak. So 25, Barry Bonds wore it for the Giants, Mark McGwire, twin evil towers. Those two guys. So I think we just reject them. Kevin, an important number, oddly, in Pittsburgh Penguins lore. There was there was Kevin Stevens who lifted the cup up a couple of times. Max Talbot who lifted it once but scored the two big goals in the decisive game against Detroit. Randy Carlyle, mm-hmm. great defenseman, won the Norris Trophy. Then you had Freddie Biletnikoff in the NFL, the best 25 in. Wouldn't you think there'd be somebody who wore 25 better than Fred Biletnikoff? Not to diminish
him. Well,
hey,
he was a Hall of Famer receiver.
I know, but wouldn't you think that some running back had worn that? And you would think somebody would choose that number, but I guess the best running back ever is Reggie Bush and maybe Shady McCoy.
Charlie Garner?
Oh, yeah, Charlie Garner. Yeah, he's not a bad one. So who are we? And then there's also Joe Neuwendijk from hockey history. He might be the best of the group, really.
Well, you mentioned your Pittsburgh Penguins. 25 is also a big number in Angels history. Jim Abbott wore number 25. And the 2002 World Series most valuable player, Troy Gloss, wore 25.
What did Jim Edmonds wear? 39?
25. Oh, no. Edmonds, he was 20. Oh, yeah. Because Gloss was 23 when he started. Yes. Edmonds wore 25. And then when Edmonds left, Troy Gloss switched to 25.
Yeah.
The only black mark is that when the brief time that Mark Teixeira was there choking in the playoffs, he also wore 25.
Right. Yeah.
That guy hit against the Red Sox. He had to hit like 800, all of them singles.
Not enough made. As much as it was celebrated, not enough made for my money about Jim Abbott. Had hand. Now, I denounced Tom Dempsey for the half-foot kick thing because he had a steel plate in his foot on the most recent Shame report. But this deed, he would pitch the ball and then move the glove over onto his hand as the batter was taking a cut at the and he was a good fielder.
He was a good fielder. Yeah, he was not a liability on the field, which was amazing.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable deed.
He was actually a pretty decent hitter, too.
And that's right. Yeah, right. And now Tony Romo has all four of his extremities, and yet he continues to choke.
He's terrible.
To me, that's the story. And as a side note, before we talk about Tony Romo, I think that that Mark Sanchez is the greatest beneficiary of Tony Romo's failures, not just because the Jets win a game, but boy, Sanchez was equally as choky. He did everything he could to throw the game away too. Terrible passes, terrible decision making, and only because Tony Romo, the fumble I don't have a beef with. He's just trying to,
to make
sense.
Play.
You see, in full speed, you watch that people say, why didn't he just take a knee? Watch it in full speed. You break for the goal line, and a split second later, there are three guys coming down on you. And and the fact of the matter is, his knee is a half an inch from hitting the ground before the ball comes loose. And if the knee does, then they easily win the game, and that's the end of that. It's not a controversy anymore. But now, what if, and I don't think this is going to happen, but what if the Cowboys lose this game? I have him, Tony Romo was my fantasy quarterback on my two biggest teams. If they lose this game, I don't know that they have anywhere else to go except for possibly David Garrard, and then my team's going to be in a lot of trouble. But boy, Tony Romo is in the crosshairs right now.
What about John Kitna? Martellus Bennett thought he was better anyways.
Well, maybe. Maybe that would be the way they go.
Weren't they? They started winning last year when they put John Kitna back there.
And another game. Well, we're going to get to all these make our picks. Into the DeLorean. We'll see how they all turn out. But
he did put up really good passing numbers against the Jets defense, which everybody thought was going to shut them down. So that's one game against the Jets. Give him a chance to play against these other guys because he could end up having a really good – if he does that – choking aside and all those things, he could end up putting up really good numbers.
Here, to me, like the late, great Jerry Orbach says at the end of Dirty Dancing, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I was wrong about the Bears. The Bears look legit. We'll see if they can keep that going. But the defense looks for real. Brian Urlacher may or may not be out on the field because of the death of his mother this week. But the defense looks good. I think the Saints are going to take care of business this week. But that division is shaping up to be rough, the North, the NFC North, if the Lions are for real. And the Steelers, I thought they would lose that game, but I did not think they would lose in the fashion they did. The thing that is amazing, it's hard to make sense of even, is the fact that they got run all over. And now this declaration from Warren Sapp, among others. Warren Sapp completely has torched the Steelers. He says, it's over, they're old, they're slow, forget them. And it doesn't make sense, logically, because they were in the Super Bowl 6 months ago. But when you fall off the cliff in the NFL, you fall fast. When you get old, it happens, it seems, overnight. And I'm very concerned, as a Steeler fan, that this is a portent of things to come. I wouldn't be surprised. They have an easy schedule is the best thing they have going for them. But, boy, that if they can't stop the run, that whole defense, that whole team is predicated on the Steelers' ability to stuff the run, force the opponent into passing situations, force some turnovers, and then take care of business on these, score enough points on the other side. And if they can't stop the run, they're in trouble. Although, the idea that they're old is a little weird because they have Lamar Woodley, Lawrence Timmons, Troy Polamalu's not an old man. They have the two young defensive ends with Ziggy Hood and Hayward now. It's the idea that to just throw that out, well, they got old. Well, they're not old, though. I mean, James Ferrier is old, yes.
They look like a newborn compared to Kerry Collins' beard.
So... all right, should we want to just jump into the DeLorean and see what goes down, see what happens?
Let's do it. Yeah,
I know we're barely even reviewing week one, but we've got McGarry coming up.
Yeah, it seems foolish to try to break down the games when we can just go into time.
Why guess what's going to happen? All right, well, let's jump it. Let's do it.
This is what makes time travel possible, the flux capacitor. It's a future.
Well, happy Tuesday to you, everybody, and it's nice to be here. I do want to say I don't like to get political. I personally thought it was wrong of Obama in the press conference to wear that Glenn Rice jersey, but I don't want to get into all that stuff right now. Let's get into the ball games here, and let's start it off in Heinz Field on the banks of the Three Rivers. The Steelers, disappointing game, obviously, in Baltimore in week one. They bounce back, but it's a little bit tougher than what a lot of the experts figured it would be. 21-10.
A little disappointing, but, you know, this isn't Boise State. They don't need style points. They needed a win. They got it. That's good enough.
I guess so, but still a lot left to be desired. Roethlisberger and company have to get it going. Mendenhall looked good in that one. Cowboys, another team that a lot of people are talking about. Tony Romo's fourth quarter failure. They go into the Bay Area. I was skeptical about how this one might work out if Romo could bounce back, but boy, did he ever. The defense looked a little bit better. 34-23, the Cowboys get out of Candlestick with a win.
They did well, but why is Tony Romo insist on wearing that starter cap every? It was cool in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, what's up? Like, who would endorse a product that was popular in the? Oh wait, Tom Brady did.
Yeah. If you thought it was square where you are, a week later, it's even more square in the future. The fashion styles. You and I got to get new wardrobes. All right. Next up, Buffalo hosts the Oakland Raiders. Raiders pounding the ball. Buffalo, a lot of question marks. They had the wonderful game, of course, against Kansas City and Arrowhead last week. But the rebuilt defense, Marcell Dareus, their first pick. They bring in Nick Barnett, Sean Merriman, a carryover from last year. They get it done. They shut down Darren McFadden at least enough to get the win. 24-20, the Bills win it.
You know, and when you make Jason Campbell have to beat you, that's a recipe for success. And let's be honest, we saw the Dolphins. We saw the Bills. These two teams are getting better. The Jets, they're in some trouble this year.
I agree with you. The future doesn't change the fact that I do not think Mark Sanchez is, over the course of his career, a winning quarterback. He's a losing proposition for that team. But kudos to the Bills. Good times for those dedicated fans up there in northern New York. Lastly, to me, I guess, and to most people, the game of the week, Mike Vick. With his new pals from Philly traveling down to his old stomping grounds in Atlanta, I think a lot of people thought this is the bounce back for the Falcons. That wasn't the real Falcons. I think this is getting to be a very ugly trend. They're a team that a lot of people figured into maybe even winning that division. A lot of people had them slotted for one of the buys in the NFC. Not looking good right now after Mike Vick, an inspired win. You knew it was important. What do you think? Is he a robot? Of course not. He's a human being. Of course he wanted to go down there. He rallied his team. They wanted to play well for him, and play well they did. Nnamdi and company, slow down Matt Ryan. I don't know if that's working out down there for him. Starting to get a little scary, like I say. 24-14, the Eagles win it.
The warm embrace from the Atlanta crowd for Michael Vick, not surprising. What is surprising, the Falcons, you're talking about a first-round bye. People are talking about this team going to the Super Bowl. And now they remind me a lot of what the Indians did this summer, where they traded away all their prospects just to finish in third place in the AL Central. Oh, by the way, in the future, Detroit locked that one up in the AL Central. And now you look at the Falcons 0-2. They're in a lot of trouble.
I'll tell you, the biggest downer of the weekend, trust me, is a Sunday night without Curb Your Enthusiasm. I can't believe it's over again. It's too bad. May as well just head back to the past, huh?
Yeah.
Whew. Color me surprised, Rank.
About what I figured.
Is that right? That's
yeah.
what you figured?
I wasn't too sure.
We
shocked.
Didn't even need to get into the DeLorean. You knew that that's where it was going before we did. We could have saved the trip.
I'm a bit of a savant, yes.
All right.
But it's good. It's good to be at the future. I got a chance to get some sneak previews on some shows. Got to see Night of Champions, the WWE pay-per-view. So that was kind of surprising. But yeah, but overall, worthwhile trip, though.
Among all the other storylines, though, Rank, maybe the biggest story, at least in the last 48 hours or so, is this hooey and applesauce with Chad 85 and a couple of the Patriots vets from their so-called dynasty.
Right.
Ocho, of course, sent out a little tweet earlier in the week. Everyone's aware of it. But here he is, everybody, all the way from England, our pal. He helps us at NFL.com. It's Handsome Hank. How are you, Handsome?
Good, Dave. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure to see you as always. And first of all, Handsome, we bring him in here to read the tweet of the week because he puts it in the best possible light with it, as you can hear that elegant voice of his. The voice is almost as attractive as the man is.
Almost.
Almost.
And a new haircut, too, which is fetching.
Yeah, looking well. Now, Handsome, real quick, though, you put up on NFL.com the NFL, the animated debut of it. You love it. I thought you always liked the Shame Report as well, but then just before we started the spin here today, you had a revelation for me. Tell me what it was.
It's no revelation, Dave. All I'm saying is that the NFL...
Well, it was to me.
Okay, the NFL I love. I adore the NFL. It's my favorite thing that you've ever done. The Shame Report is a close second. But
no,
I think,
that's not what you said. You didn't say it was a close second. You said the NFL is way better than the Shame Report.
It is way better. You should be thrilled. It's like Dan Marino right up there. Happy 50th birthday, Dan. And then, you know... A little way below that, you've got the likes of Joe Montana and the rest of them.
Is that how you feel, really, or are you patronizing me now?
No, I'm being
serious.
Yeah,
the shame report will do. It will do. Now the NFL, now that's truly inspired. I'm surprised I didn't come up with it myself. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, that's about right.
All right, Handsome, enough. Now, make with the tweet. Read what Chad 85 tweeted out. I guess it was Tuesday after the game. So in awe of his team's performance.
Just waking up after a late arrival. I've never seen a machine operate like that in person. To see video game numbers put up in person was wow.
Well, you definitely brought it, and you definitely put it in a positive light. And for the first time, I believe, in Dave Damashek football program history, I think you win me over with your reading of that. I don't understand what Teddy Bruschi and Rodney Harrison are getting so bent out of shape about, except that they're analysts and maybe somebody got in their ear and say, it's great if you can take a strong opinion. I hate to be cynical, but I know that people actually do that. Hey, take a hardline stance on something.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
That would never happen.
Kamish Goodell gets in my ear all the time. Go ahead, Dave. I know you're a sweetheart, but let them have it, you know, kind of thing.
But that comment seems natural coming from a guy with a British accent. You don't expect a 10, 12-year veteran to come out and be like, how does Carson Palmer feel right now?
So you have
like,
a problem
thanks, pal.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. That's fair that it hurts. I because to me, the other side of that coin is, well, he just left Cincinnati, which is a miserable place to toil in your prime and to get nothing out of it. This must be a breath of fresh air. But you're right. If he has any relationship with any of his former teammates, they probably are a little wounded.
Yeah, Carson's like, thanks for holding on to all those balls. You know why Tom Brady had such a great night? He didn't target you.
Well, but isn't it what I always like? What do I always talk about is I don't like when the players, when it just is transparent that what they care about is their paycheck and their individual numbers. This is somebody who's enthusiastic about being on a really good team. I don't understand how any fan could get upset about it. And I really don't understand what Teddy Bruschi is angry about. So somebody comes to the team, things go well, they scored 98 points or whatever they scored. Tom Brady threw for, you know, over 1,000 yards or whatever he did. And And Chad 85 is excited about that, and Teddy Bruschi scolds him for it. Strange.
He had the best view of it because he was on the sideline not playing. So yeah, I get that.
I guess I understand. I assume this has something to do with behind the scenes. I'm guessing Bruschi and Harrison didn't approve of the signing in the first place. They thought right. It was a bad move, and this is a way to validate the opinion that they had, whatever, a month or 6 weeks ago when 85 first got to the team, to put him down, and maybe they think this will somehow get Belichick to kick him off the team because they think he's going to ultimately be a cancer. But I don't understand the logic behind putting him down because he's enthusiastic about being on a good team.
It's not the Patriot way.
I see.
Well, maybe Belichick
being human. I know that really isn't.
You don't do that.
Maybe Belichick actually asked his former players to deliver a message on his behalf because he didn't want to do that in front of the team.
Wow, handsome, cynical, but maybe you're on to something. Would we put that beyond Belichick? No indeed. You might have cracked the code here.
He videotaped opposing coaches. I don't think anything's out of the realm of possibility with
him. I think this may be something. Like, listen, fellas, really just, start bad-mouthing and make him uncomfortable, make this an uneasy situation for him, and then he'll just maybe quit.
Yeah, but Belichick was the guy who brought him in, he finds all these antics hilarious.
Well, he is a card himself, that much is for sure. We know that about Coach Belichick. All right, Handsome Hank, a pleasure to see you, eh?
Good to see you guys, too. Thank you.
All the best. Hey, NFL is great. I agree. We're going to have another one next week up, too.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be the one about the one we did recently about we already did.
Do we want to ruin the surprise?
It's a good one. That's all.
It's a great one.
It's one that we've already done there. But the Shame Report will be back next week too. Much to your chagrin, Handsome Hank.
Where can I find these? Because when the page props up, I don't see it immediately. Do I have to scroll down?
Yeah, you got to scroll down just below where you see ranks, pick six columns. All right, Handsome.
He's
thank
shooting
you.
Daggers.
We'll look forward to seeing you. We'll look forward to seeing you soon. All right, Rank. Listen, I say now we move on. We got to get McGarry in here.
Yep.
But very quickly, something that's been weighing on my mind lately is best smells. We started talking about best smells, and then I sort of put it into a more specific area. The best smelling place, mm-hmm. in the U.S. of A, and like a gas station. In fact, we have it up as a poll now on the Dave Damashek blog. Look for Damashek, NFL.com. You'll dig me up that way. And it's a poll up there now. Gas station, the mall tobacco store. Mm-hmm. The beach is very nice because you get
the
that
beach.
Suntan lotion, the coconut oils and everything. And if you're allowed to have beer out there, that smells good. Beer is a common theme with a lot
okay.
of these. If there's beer available and open, that helps the smell. Plus the sea smells terrific. I think that's right up there. A steakhouse, any kind of restaurant that you like, but a steakhouse in particular.
Oh, yeah.
You salivate when you walk in there. Around the holidays when you're walking the street and it's snowy and everything and people have fires going and there's something good in everybody's oven, And then there's some spiced cakes and pies and everything.
Nice.
That's delicious. Well, football. What about football stadium?
Football stadium.
Football stadium because there's beer, there's wieners being grilled, there's stogies being smoked in the stands or, out back somewhere. The tailgates smell great. You know what I'm saying?
That's good. But what about baseball stadium during the summer? Because
it's close.
You actually combine the beach and the stadium because you have the fresh cut grass out here in Southern California.
Yeah.
People have applied the suntan lotion. You got beer. You can still smell the dogs from the tailgate. That's nice too.
Wilk tie, your opinion?
I mean, all those do smell good. I'm not going to take away from those, but for some reason, I've always been a big fan of airport smells. It's the gas station smell, but like what? To an extreme. I know everyone thinks I'm weird for that.
Are you saying airport restroom?
No, not restroom.
Senator Craig?
No. No, just like when you're walking around in the terminal, you get like gasoline coming in, like seeping through the windows.
Ugh, that's the worst
that
one I've heard.
No, I
that
love
really
it.
Is
I love that smell.
I don't also,
I stand
I also
by
don't
it.
Understand that's, when people say new car. I don't get the new car. That when,
wait, no, no, no.
I don't
dude,
like that smell
the,
either.
The new car smells great.
It's not comparable to airports.
It's not
airports.
It's not milk level bad, but
I've never heard anyone say,
look,
doesn't it smell good in here?
I'll take a football stadium with a tailgate going any day over an airport. I'm just saying airports are underappreciated.
Right. Shame
no,
you. Turn your
no,
mic off. All right, let's move on to our guest, eh?
Do 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 da 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 down ba da down bada boom bam bam Dave.
Now you know him from Kissing Susie Colbert, from Deadspin, and now he's a novelist. He just came out with the book The Postmortal. The formerly heavy set, Big Daddy Drew, Drew McGarry. What's going down, fella?
It's good to see you, my my former partner in norm writing.
That's right. For 1 week, we were colleagues at the ill-fated Norm MacDonald Sports Show. Yeah, what were your fondest memories there, McGarry?
I liked the free food. I was very excited for the free food. There was free pop chips, and there were bananas, and I'd take them all, and then some dude would restock it, and I'd hear him restocking it, and I'd wait for him to leave, and then I'd immediately go in and try and stuff my face with everything that was free. I'm a disgusting person.
Well, I don't want to be pretentious, but a pretentious Hollywood sort, but that was nothing. That was a cable TV pilot. You should see the spread they throw out for network stuff. And if it's a network sitcom, they go breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's always food out 24/7. Now that's really good living.
Yeah, I don't know how you wouldn't be a total fat ass. Like, I used to write ads, and at the commercial shoot, they'd have a van parked outside, and the van would cook anything you wanted all day long. And always in the morning, they'd make, like, breakfast burritos, and I'm like a whore for breakfast burritos. Like, I would marry a freaking breakfast burrito if I could. I would always go and get, like six breakfast burritos, just a repugnant amount of breakfast food.
No, God bless you. I like where your head's at. My favorite thing from the Norm MacDonald pilot was the day we went outside and we competed. We had little we saw who could run the 50-yard dash the fastest, and then it turned into a wrestling competition, which I backed out of. I knew I wouldn't do well with that one.
Yeah, I didn't participate in either because I had a bad back. So,
Who was the best wrestler?
It was Kyle, the PA. I think he beat everybody.
That's right. Luke Cunningham tried really hard. Norm was surprisingly spry for an old man who overdoses on Pepto-Bismol in front of everyone.
That's right. Yeah, that was a weird deed, too, that Norm would take, not the chewables, you understand, but
the bottle.
The ones that you're supposed to swallow. No, the pill ones, the pill form that you're supposed to ingest with water. He ate, I think it was an entire bottle in front of us, and not for the effect, not to get a laugh or anything. He just was eating it because that was what he decided to do. Why he didn't get the chewable?
I don't think he knew he was eating it. It was just like someone was like, "Hey, Norm, you're eating Pepto-Bismol?" And he was like, "What? What? Oh!" it's like pink foam coming out of his mouth. Like, oh, all right.
So that was your brush with stardom, with Hollywood Elite, eh?
That was my taste of the big time.
Well, let's talk about this novel. I can't imagine writing a book. I mean, I can scratch out a bunch of hooey and applesauce about sports, or you know, a lame bit or two for a comedy show. But writing a novel, how did this get into your head?
I've written another book before called Men with Balls, which was a stupid book. I mean, I liked it, but it was, you know, it was a comedy book. And the problem is, I think, like, in general, people don't buy sports or humor books, and especially not sports humor books. So I had to write a real book, you know, just because that's what I do. And, you know, I think, you know, when I was a kid, you know, books seemed like these ridiculously impossible things. Like, the idea that one person could write 500 pages of something seemed like a lie to me. Do you know what I mean?
I agree completely. I still feel that way.
I was always like, there's no way. You'd be 1,000 years old by the time you finished. No one actually did this, you know? Like, I always figured it was manufactured by some book corporation.
That's where the post-mortal would actually come in handy, is that you could live long enough to write a book.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So when I wrote the first book, because I had never written a book before, but I, you know, you sort of break it down into pieces, and since I had been a blogger for some time and I had realized, hey, well, I've written enough crap on blogs to have it look like a book, even though it would be a really bad book. So if you treat it in just these little increments, a little something you update every day, then suddenly at the end of it, oh, hey, it's a book. Cool. Now I can go get money.
And you're getting, listen, and as Rank says, The Postmortal, and it's getting rave reviews across the land, and it's flying off the bookshelves.
Yes, it's red hot, Damashek. Red hot. It's the phenom.
I love it. The premise of it is about the extension of life. This is one of my favorite subjects. I feel that our research dollars are going in the wrong direction. I mean, for me, it's teleportation. Why that's not the first order of business, I'm not sure. But close behind it is this notion of eternal life. Talk a little bit about specifically what the book's all about.
Well, basically, it's about someone who invents a cure for aging, and you can freeze your age at sort of any point. And then when the protagonist gets it, and then it takes him through sort of his life as an ageless person, and also the life of the world as everyone freezes their ages and starts fighting for resources and things like that. It gets a little hairy, and there's lots of murder and mayhem, which makes it fun. There is some sports. There's a little bit of sports into it because the main character's a Bills fan, so he's afraid he's going to live for 500 years and never see the Bills win a frickin' Super Bowl. And the other thing was there's a small section about baseball record. I had a much bigger section I had to cut out, but it was about sort of home run records and how, you know, career home run records would be sort of useless because if baseball players lived forever, they would end up constantly breaking and topping and just adding to their totals as they went along because they'd never lose their prime sort of athletic condition. And it would make for a really great sports. Like, it would be amazing because all of the Hall of Famers would be playing all at once, you know? Like, there'd be some Hall of Famers that wouldn't even make the cut some year. And, you know, and you'd have these just the game would be completely optimized, and you wouldn't have annoying barroom conversations where it's like, I think Otto Graham is better than Joe Montana and all that stupid crap, because they'd all be on the same field, you know what I mean? But at the same time, because no one had a career that was actually going to end, you couldn't define any of these sort of long-term records, which would be difficult for people to sort of digest.
Which would invalidate our interest in sports then, right?
Well, no, I mean, not necessarily, because I think the quality of the games would be so high. It would force you to think about records and things like that differently, which we actually do now. We do think about stats differently than we did 10, 20 years ago.
I guess so, yeah. Our mutual pal, Jonah Carey, who, by the way, is a huge fan of this book, he's obviously big on the so-called advanced stats. But listen, go, Rank, you got something?
It would be a bad world where Peyton Manning would never have to retire. LeBron James would be around forever. You'd be like, great, can this guy go away?
A 314-year veteran.
Aren't you all sad that he's not going to be around to kick around this year?
We had to cancel one of the days of the podcast just because of it.
Really?
No.
Oh, all right.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine what are the likes of Mark Schlereth going to talk about besides this man is a manager out on the field. He is the offensive coordinator out there. He's like a coach on the field.
He's a competitor. He competes. He just wants to win.
Hey, you know what he is? He's a credit to the game.
He's a credit to the game. I love that one. That means nothing. He's a traveler's check to the game.
How many more surgeries could Mark Schlereth have if he was eternally, you know, gifted?
I don't know, but none of them seem to keep him from peeing his pants, do they?
Or saying National Football League. He fills his 90. I'm on to you, Schlereth. He fills his 90-second to 2-minute long hits on SportsCenter by saying National Football League a half dozen to 8 times each one, and therefore he only has to sprinkle in the words Brady, Manning, and Breeze. And that's it. Great job again, Schlereth. You've done it again.
And always the full name of the player. It's never Brady. It's always Tom Brady. It's never Breeze. It's, I think, Drew Breeze. You know, as if there's some other Breeze that he'd be talking about. Oh, I thought he meant Amber Breeze.
There's a lot of talk, too, and too much for my taste, about our league and this league. In this league, you know, he's one of the best players we have in our league. Listen, enough with the our league jazz. I get it that it was important to do that during the lockout, the show, that there was a fraternity. But now it's time to get back. We got to start drawing the lines between teams and building these rivalries back. Our league? No, no, no. My team, the rest of you mooks are, can go screw is what I say.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff may work in the Bay State League, but in this league.
I do love, like I say, the notion of eternal life. But you know what I always think about, and I think actually this would make for a great picture, or perhaps your next novel, let me throw this at you, is what is, and I'm sure you address this, What if we are? Because I've always said I'd like to be cremated. You know, just right. You know, just turn me into ashes and spread me into places where I enjoyed myself. The bars and taverns spread across the continental U.S.
All the Oriental massage parlors that you frequent.
Don't you pull back the curtain on my personal life? I relax how I relax, sir.
He's left other stuff there.
Plenty more.
Now listen, in the last 6 months or year, I have now started to think maybe I shouldn't be cremated. I want to stick around. I want my body because I'm starting to believe that we might be the baseline. We might be the border that we don't live to 80 or 90 or 100, but maybe our generation, literally our generation, goes to 150 or 160. And won't that be weird if that's true? That the generation before us, our parents and everybody else, they'll have been gone for 100-some years. Won't that be a weird moral thing to deal with?
Not for me. It would be. You'd feel awful, wouldn't you? Because your parents were the unluckiest generation, the one that just missed out before everybody was able to get in on it. And it is something that serious scientists do talk about. They do talk about, you know, there's a crazy guy named Aubrey de Grey who believes the first 150-year-old person has already been born, and there are people who believe in something called the singularity, that by 2045, artificial intelligence will be so advanced that it'll be able to merge with human life. So your brain would be inside your computer, and then you could, go into RedTube for real or something like that. You know? So, I mean, I do think that those are things that people are exploring. I don't know. I mean, given that, I can't get Microsoft Word to cooperate with me, I don't know how realistic it is that it's going to happen right away. But.
Yeah, I'm behind the eight ball. You're exactly right. I'm behind the eight ball because I'm so poor with computers that I'm going to get screwed on this deal. When they do, I've read the same sort of thing that, right, at some point it's this virtual reality that our intellect at least will be able to survive in perpetuity.
It could be the lawnmower man, Damashek. We'll all be the lawnmower man. Mm.
We'll be worshiping that little like paperclip that comes up on Microsoft Word.
So let's talk about we like to talk ball here on the
talking ball.
Let's talk football.
Let's talk ball.
And, hey Drew, you're a Vikings fan. Talk about it.
Yeah, the one team that couldn't pass last week. That's my team.
Yeah, I know. It is. Yeah, you really do have to feel unlucky when Luke McCown can lead his team to a touchdown, but Donovan McNabb, what did he complete? Minus two passes, something like that, in San Diego.
It was bad. I think it was 29 yards. I think it was 29 yards.
Egad! So first of all, you're in D.C. as we speak, and but you're a Vikings fan. How did that happen?
Well, I spent most of my childhood in Minnesota, about 7 years, and I went. I always say that because we sort of moved around when I was a kid, but I would say if you went through puberty in one place, that's where you grew up. That's where you sort of, that's your reference point. So that's how I ages like 5 to 13, I was in Minnesota, so that's how I ended up rooting for all the Minnesota teams.
Yeah, that's when you really latch on to it hardcore, and so it makes sense. So that you were without dating you, so you're Tommy Kramer era.
It was right as Tommy Kramer was giving way to Wade Wilson, and then after that, it was the sort of
Rich Gannon
rotation of Denny Green retread quarterback.
Oh yeah, so wow, you're a real
Rich
trooper.
Yeah, Rich Gannon, Sean Salisbury, all those guys.
Yuck. So yeah, so you're a real trooper that you stuck with that team during the lean years.
Yeah, and the good years haven't been much better.
No, I know the best year you've had in the last quarter century was 15-1, the Randall Cunningham year that ends in heartbreak.
Yeah, that was pretty awful because I knew with both of those title game losses, 98 and in 2009, both times I knew immediately that they wouldn't contend for another decade.
And that America was deprived because if the Vikings win that game, then you have a gangbuster Super Bowl against Elway. And even better would have been if the Colts would have gone. That would have been the final score to that game would have been 71-68 or something like that. If you would have gotten the Colts and Vikes playing one another,
it's true. It's true. Our team was more important than the other team, and it should have been. It should have happened that way.
Absolutely.
Gary Anderson. Oh, it's the worst. That's a horrible story for poor Gary Anderson. So many prolific
years.
Thank you
for bringing that up, Damashek. I really appreciate it. Well, give me a paper cut and pour lemon juice in it.
Well, since we're opening wounds, the Vikings are one of the teams that are threatening to move to Los Angeles. Now, you living on the East Coast, does it matter to you where they play? Like, if the Vikings move to L.A., would you cease being a fan?
I think that I might. I've had a lot of time to think about it because they've been threatening to move ever since McCombs owned the team, you know, which is about 10 years ago. And I don't know if I would stay a fan if they left. I know there are people like Will Leach who, you know, he was a St. Louis Cardinals fan, and then they moved, and he stayed with the Arizona Cardinals, which, you know, it almost makes sense when they keep the likeness of the team, when they keep the name, when they keep the uniform. I don't know why that's important. I mean, it's just superficial, but for some reason it does matter.
Or if they go to a better city.
Yeah, if they moved to L.A. and they became the L.A., I don't know, Stars or the L.A. people giving you fingers on the freeway or something like that, I don't know that I could root for that team. Like, I think I'd probably end up just being a fan of the league and just rooting for teams in general.
What about, though, if since you have two little kids, and
right.
what about so they're in D.C., are they Skins fans, or is the little boy a Skins fan?
Well, he's too small. He's 2.5, so he doesn't. I mean, he had an Adrian Peterson onesie and all that stuff, but I know you can't control that. It's like, you know, it's like the dad who doesn't want his kid to turn gay, so he buys him, you know, trucks and all that stuff. There's no real stopping. If the kid wants to be a Redskins fan, then he'll end up being a Redskins fan. I can try and push against it as much as I can, but that'll just push him more to being what I don't want him to be, you know?
I like a guy who's making such valid science points uses, he's going to turn out that way.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm with McGarry on this point. I say all the time, listen, I grew up on the banks of the Three Rivers. Good news if we're talking football, but baseball, of course, the Pirates are abysmal.
Right.
Do I now, is it emotional child abuse to try and make my son, he also is 2.5, if when he starts to become lucid about sports, if he in fact embraces sports, to make him a Pirates fan? Isn't that the wrong thing to do?
I don't know because first of all, I don't know that you'd succeed anyway, because if you're taking him to a game, you're going to end up taking him to a Dodger game or something like that, right? Then he'd have memories of the Dodgers when he's young. Maybe he becomes a Dodgers fan. Maybe he gets all confused and doesn't know. Maybe he becomes bi-curious about teams. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know that there's any way to avoid them sort of acting on their own, which is sort of the nice thing about kids. They sort of act in ways you can't predict, but I think it's tough to, I think you can force them to try and, you know, be a fan of your team, but I don't think it's always a guarantee.
What do you think of Rank here mentioned you mentioned the 2009 season where you just about got to the Super Bowl. How hard was it? Because I've denounced Packers fans who would be able to cheer for, to continue to applaud Brett Favre after he had left the team to go and play for the arch rival. That was morally wrong in my book. How hard was it, though, as a Vikings fan to root for Favre after all those years of tormenting you?
Well, I mean, I hated his guts, but, you know, any number of teams have guys that you don't like, but if they're still on your team, you know, it's like if your Pirates signed, like, Milton Bradley, who you know is a jackass, but you'd still want him to hit the ball, you know what I mean? Like, I may not like the guy, but I still want him to succeed for the sake of the team. So it wasn't that hard for me watching
the
game.
Yeah, but I would not.
Like,
actually, a more straightforward analogy is Ray Lewis. If you told me that the difference from the Steelers going to the Super Bowl versus going 5-11 was signing Ray Lewis, I would say we'll take 5-11. I don't want him on our team.
Oh,
and
you're still full of it. You're
that's
full
absolutely
that's terrible.
That is
no.
absolutely. I'm
you're
not
wrong.
Talking.
About,
that
you're
is
wrong.
Absolutely
you're
the
wrong.
Truth.
Well,
don't you tell me I'm wrong.
Listen, if I was a kid and you would have told me that Joe Montana is coming to play for the Rams, I would have been all about it.
Yep.
I would have been the first one at the store buying the 16 Rams jersey.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Vikings fan. I'd take Aaron Rodgers today. It's not even a question. You're an idiot, Damashek.
No, you know what it is? I'm a champion because I have those 6 rings and you guys are more desperate. I think that's what it speaks to. That's my guess. That's what No, I no longer delude myself into thinking that the Steelers do it the right way after the last couple of off seasons that those fellows have put together. What do you think, though, now going forward? We saw Donovan McNabb. The sample size is small, but it doesn't look too good going forward. What do you think? Christian Ponder the rest of the way, or do you figure this is a lost season, let the old man take the beating and save the kid for next year?
I think that McNabb will give way to Webb first, and I think Webb would play for a few weeks, and then I think you'd see Ponder by the last couple of months. That's what I think would happen. But I can't imagine them not going to Ponder at some point, especially if McNabb plays the way that he played. I mean, you know, it's easy to say he doesn't have a lot of help, because he doesn't. His pass protection's awful, and all the receivers except for Percy Harvin are terrible, but he's not good either. So it's best that for them to get Ponder in there sooner to make sure that they know if he's worth a damn, so that they can, you know, see what happens. Maybe they stick McNabb in there because they don't like Ponder and they want to get Andrew Luck, but I just, you know, right now, it's just like 2008, where the team, every passing yard feels like they had to pull their teeth out to get. Just, it's brutal to watch a team like that.
And besides your guys, that may shape up by the end of the season to be the toughest of all the divisions. If the Lions are real, I thought the Bears were due to fall back this year, but they looked dynamite in week one, too.
Yeah, they didn't obey any of our instructions, did they? We thought they'd all suck. Unbelievable.
Well, I got one more. One thing we were talking about here is today is it occurred to me that I have to figure out what the best. I like smells a lot. You know, I like patchouli quite a bit, and orange blossom are some of my favorite smells. But then I got to thinking, what is the best smelling place in the U.S. of A., McGarry? I say like a football game when it's early. Early autumn, when the air starts to get crisp and maybe there's a fire burning nearby, and you smell the beer and the wieners roasting and the cigars being smoked, or a gas station or a malt tobacco store. You know, what's your favorite smell?
I see. So not like a city.
No, like not Cleveland versus, not like that.
I like the smell when you go out trick-or-treating. Because it's just cold enough. Some people have fires, like some of the old people in the neighborhood have fires, but you still have sort of the crisp autumn air, and then, you know, there's like the smell of like a Butterfinger before I eat 50 of them and stuff like that. You know, I do have that. There is that football smell, because I used to play football, and you know that where you take the practice field and you can smell the grass, and you know it changes from summer when it's very hot and there's that sort of just primal disgusting smell, but still very affectionate for it. But then in the fall it changes too. So I like those smells, Damashek.
But for best smelling city, it would have to be, if you've ever passed through there, Hershey, PA, because it actually smells like chocolate.
I used to have to go to meetings there, and when you go at like 8 a.m. like for a meeting, it's gross. It's like you really don't. And you go in the conference rooms, and they have bowls of chocolate, and they're like filled to the rim, and there are people eating like freaking Kit Kats at like 8 a.m. and it's disgusting. And then like the bowl levels off, and they come in and they refill it so that it's overflowing again. It's like candy overload. Like you get diabetes by osmosis.
As a portly fellow, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Maybe on your way out here, McGarry, real quick, you're a formerly heavyset fella. Help out Rank. What's a tip for him? He's slowly eating himself to death.
You have to weigh yourself every day.
I can't do it.
I have to look at my lack of hair. For so long, when I finally did it, it was fine.
Well, McGarry, of course, famous for doing that, is tweeting out his weight and shaming himself.
He's good, yeah. He looks
very good.
Also, another thing, too, you've been very open about your weight. You were also open about your stand-up career. I want to tell you, not as bad as you think it was. I think you got something there.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, the problem is you have to work hard. You have to be at a freaking stand-up club until 11 at night, surrounded by 50 other comics who want you to fail. And maybe you get on stage for 2 minutes, but sometimes you don't get on stage at all. And you have to do it every night until you either break or you make it. And it's just, you have to be pretty dedicated, or you have to be a hugely depressed human being to do it.
All right, McGarry. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. I hope Paul Rodriguez gets a sports show at some point soon, and we can maybe even do a full fortnight together out here in Hollywood, making some pages together there, or for whatever other reason you find your way out to Hollywood. Let's catch up, eh?
All right, man.
Of course, the book, The Postmortal. A novel. He's a smarter fellow than I am, because in spite of what he said, I could never scratch out a book like that. But The Postmortal, great reviews available all over the place. And McGarry, let's make a habit out of this. Don't be a stranger. We'll kibitz at some point down the line here during the season. Eh?
Anytime, fella. Anytime.
All right. All the best. There he goes. Drew McGarry.
Wait, hold on.
We're over an hour already.
Wait, hold on. So I'm getting a... Somebody's in the window. We have a guest.
I don't see anyone in the window.
No, he's right there. Still too far.
Oh, yeah, he's right there. Yeah.
Wait, what? A guest? All right, patch him. If he's here, patch him through. Oh, yeah. Hey, hey, David. Yeah, you know, yeah, it's your old pal, Norm. You know, yeah, listening to you two guys, you know, yeah, kind of not a mystery why my show tanked, you know?
Terrific stuff. That was
all
good.
Right. Yeah, man.
Now, what was the last impression you did?
The Connery one?
Oh, yeah, you did Sean Connery. Listen, that's a step up from your Connery impression.
That wasn't good?
No, that was good. It was the, sort of the difference between, in Handsome Hank's mind, the difference between the NFL and the Shame Report. It was a good job. All right, Rank, enough's enough. Let's get out of here. You know what I really want to do? Maybe we can squeeze this in. It's Thursday today, but maybe tomorrow. If you listen to the show, if you enjoy the program, follow me at Twitter, at Damashek. Follow Rank, at Adam Rank. Maybe we could even squeeze this in tomorrow. Maybe I'll put it out there on Twitter officially. We could do a segment, like we could call it Tweet Nay. Mm-hmm. And we just take questions and we just, you know, we listen to the Czech Republic and the Rank Amateurs. We answer their questions. We kibitz with them via the online technology.
That would be outstanding.
All right, let's look into that, see if we can carve out some time to do that. If we don't do that, enjoy your weekend of football. And one way or the other, you can make sure you check us out on NFL Fantasy Live Sunday morning, Sunday in the AM, Sunday in the A at... at 8:30 Pacific, and that means it's 11:30 East, or East,
yes.
Eastern
East,
Standard
Eastern Deliverance.
I think it's EST still.
It's not EDT.
I think we're in EST. Let's get out of here. We're wasting time. All right, listen. We'll be back for more Hootie and Applesauce at some point very soon. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.